Welcome everybody to the Use Case Realization call for November 19th. We are going to be talking about the Configuration Persistence Service today. And is Tony going to join us?
Sorry, I'm not on mute. Tony's going to be joining us in about half an hour. He has a clashing, he had a three clashing meetings, he told me, so, but he can join us in about half an hour.
Okay, all right. So let me see, I think I have the page up here. Just gonna log in here. And Peter somebody, I'm not sure who that is. Okay. Okay, we're just gonna start off with an overview of the project, and then Toyn, who's the new PTL of the project, will be discussing some concepts, and Neve, who's on the call along with Toyn, will be giving maybe a demo or talk on the APIs. So, so the CPS started as a POC in this release in R7, and then it'll be a new component coming in R8. So basically, it's some of the to set the context or set the stage. CPS is looking to address some basic issues where you have lots of different data sources coming from different domains and different vendors, and you have lots of different data basically coming from lots of different possible sources. And how do you integrate that, and how do you manage that data? And the CPS is as a model-driven persistence allows that data to be stored and kept over time and organized. Another key concept is that we want to share data to be able to have different microservices and different parts of ONAP use different data. There are microservices that need to work together, and there are information that needs to be shared across functions and different analytic capabilities. And so there has to be a way to basically efficiently share that data, and that is handled through model ownership and a registration mechanism that allows problems of contention and race conditions to be handled. And then basically, because we have lots of data coming in from different places, we need to be able to support potentially different models without completely overhauling the entire platform. And so being able to onboard models will allow the system to efficiently handle the kind the different kinds of data, but also to understand the kinds of data that it needs to manage. So that sort of sets the stage for CPS. CPS is meant to be a data layer service that can help service providers manage data coming from different vendors and different domains, different networks, that legacy networks as well, to try to integrate. So we've seen, you know, that ONAP is not necessarily going to be working in a greenfield system, but very often a service provider will have an existing network that they already have databases that they need to integrate and evolve. and there are lots of potential applications and use cases that will need to compete for access to that same data, as we mentioned before, is one of the stage problems. So I'm going to just jump ahead a little bit to describe architecturally ONAP fits in this shared service box. So basically, it's providing a data layer service to all the other components and external systems in ONAP. And what it does is it allows microservices and use cases to store and manage network element data. So specifically data for an XNF. And that data is stored within a internal, you know, one or more CPS databases. And there are VES events such that you can send up information into ONAP and basically have it be have that network element data be stored within the database. And then, of course, as ONAP operates, you can read and write information to the database and this concept of syncing with ANA we'll talk about in a bit. So just to underscore, this slide is trying to show one key message of this slide is that CPS isn't meant to replace all those existing, you know, 35 databases that already exist in ONAP. Rather, it's meant to complement what's there as a place to store specifically network element data. So one of the drivers for this use case, which has now turned into a platform component, is, you know, I noticed that people were starting to just shove sort of random stuff into ANAI that didn't belong in ANAI, and that's dangerous, right? So that was one of the motivations for it. Additionally, there were use cases that already was designing their own, essentially own CPS solution, such as the OFSAN PCI use case, and what would have if nothing had happened, the end-to-end network slicing use case. They need to store data that's very specific to their use case that they need to analyze that doesn't belong really anywhere else. So we see here the physical cell identifier, the end-to-end network slicing, the A1 policy adapter, and the model-driven POC. These are examples of things things working with network element data that needs to be stored somewhere. Okay, so this is basically showing, you know, some of those other things that I showed from this slide in a little bit more detail, but I'll go over each of these in more detail in the upcoming slides. This slide is underscoring that even though we're pretty focused on RAN and wireless and 5G because that's a hot topic, you know, core and transport are also really vital, and we see them in the network slicing use cases, for example. So there are, you know, the session management function, the user data and authentication management, all these things from the core and transport routers and hubs and switches are all potentially network element type. You know, these are all PNFs and VNFs that can store data in the CPS. There will also be, and Neve and Toyin will talk about this more, there'll be a northbound APIs to allow you to access information, and there's many POCs that are using this project as well. So one of the R7 use cases, the standard find VES event, which is a virtual event streaming event that sends up information, configuration type information that's into the DCA VES collector, which then publishes onto the 3GPP provisioning namespace topic, such that anybody, including CPSs, you know, the CPS project can listen to and basically store or do something with that data. I mentioned about ANAI sync before. So basically the CPS needs to have a view of the things that exist in the network, and Twin will talk about this more, but basically, you know, for the design of things that exist, we also need to have similar elements in the CPS, you know, records for those things. But additionally, it may have additional records to store logical objects, representations of those as well. So for example, if you have a PNF 106, there needs to also be a PNF 106 record here. But PNF 106 may also have, you know, 10 cells to it too, and those would be logical objects within the CPS database. And then of course, microservices would need to read and write information to the CPS database. But you can also imagine that things within ONAP like policy or control or the controller or control loops and things like that might determine something needs to happen with a piece of data eventually. And it may need to send some kind of configuration down to the XNF. And at the same time, maybe it needs to update something in the CPS commensurately to correspond to an action that it's taking. This is This is slide is meant to represent that the things within ANEI are really distinct in many ways from CPS. So ANEI's charter is to conceptually store real-time inventory view of information. So it has a view of the boxes that exist in the system, the XNFs, PNFs, and VNFs, and so forth, and CNFs. So it should be storing inventory related type information, you know, that make, vendor, model, that kind of thing, right? So CPS isn't meant to do that. It's meant to store information about these PNFs, but operational data or configuration data, data that specifically doesn't, it's not inventory type data, not make, model, you know, serial number, real-time connections, network element data, and state type data. Now, where it overlaps, of course, is, as I mentioned before, if you have PNF 106, you're going to have also something that says, hey, PNF 106 exists over here as well. And that's really the overlap. But, you know, we should, again, like sort of like this slide is showing, there's a distinct difference between the CPS database and these other databases within ONAP that's storing state management data. So I'm going to skip this piece of it because maybe it would be good just to talk about R7, the POC. So Toyn, why don't you talk a little bit about the POC? I think that would be useful actually.
Yeah, sure, I can. So you want me to talk a little bit about these slides, Dan?
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Yeah. Okay, so again, back to the previous one, just the proof points of the POC, yeah. So basically, we set out that the POC, it was also kind of an agreement instead of logical path to get to full project that we do POC first. And the POC main intentions were to prove that we can read and write operations on young data fragments using a generic database with a simple schema that can be applied to any database, basically, and that doesn't have to be modified. So that's the second point, really, that we can deploy and upgrade young models at runtime. And then that as the models change, the data that's being stored, it's different, or the validation or things like that. So we can demonstrate that the CPS behavior is driven by the young models and it's not driven by any, we don't need changes in its schema. And then just at a high level, we want to provide the architecture and a roadmap for the use cases, for the use cases, and also the non-functional requirements. We did some performance testing, all that kind of stuff to get ready for a full ONAP project. So this was a very early high level view, component view of what CPS would entail and how it would interact with the different existing components. Most of the components are highlighted there in blue, except the persistent server itself is the new one in the middle. And then the purple boxes are about the integration, the work that needs to be done. So is my quality okay?
I think, yeah, there's some noise there.
Okay. So the purple boxes highlight the work that's needed to interact and being ready for integration with these existing other blue components to support some of the use cases. And Ben mentioned them earlier, like the SON PCI use case, end-to-end network slicing, mirroring, although mirroring itself is going to be part of the bigger CPS project as well. Maybe move on to the next slide. So for the POC itself, of course, we aren't addressing all that. We only had a couple of months. So we just focus on bringing in the server itself, being able to add models to store these generic models in a generic database, and have an API, both a REST API and a Java API to support the use cases. So these were the main things we focused on for the POC itself to get these working and to be able to demonstrate these.
And you might also want to say a little bit about what's planned in R8 as well, and progress made since then too.
Yeah, I'm not. Oh no, you probably don't have. I have slides with the updates. I think.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
this is just For R8, we're looking at. I think the XNF proxy is being proposed to work on in the R8. I'm not 100% sure on that, to be honest with you, for the exact plans. Yeah, you. How do you say? I wasn't quite prepared for that question, Ben. I'm not that familiar what exactly is going into our aid. But yeah, we're now working on the bigger picture. So the project has been approved. If maybe that's what you were looking for. So the project has been now integrated. We're working on it has been migrated, and we're simply continuing working on towards use cases. We're working with the SonOOF team specifically together to see what features of the Young language they need to support, because Young 3.0 is a hugely complex and very extensive language, and CPS will support some of that, and we need to prioritize depending on the actual real life models that are being used by components like SonOOF PCI to focus on the features of Young they use, so they can use the CPS to store that data, to query that data. There's talk about having some way of sharing queries, make them available, common queries to other components as well. Those are kind of the recent discussions that have come out of this as well.
And also setting up the repo, right? The setting up the basic project stuff, right?
Yeah, that's all done. Sorry, I didn't quite mention that. So the repo has been migrated. The jobs are running now. We have the quality control enabled. I actually think Neve did a little update on that yesterday. I think we're green again. Maybe Neve can confirm that for the CI badging. And we're working towards silver. That's a matter of achieving a certain level of code coverage. So we have plans in place to improve all that. So that's all related to the quality and releasing the project itself. Yeah, this is quite an early slide. So we've gone way beyond this, I suppose. Yeah. And this is about our ways of working. This is mainly for the meetings on Friday. Maybe this is important to mention for people that might be interested in this. So the Friday meeting is the combined kind of architecture and PTL meeting now. So what we discuss as well for the wider community is, okay, so what do we want? What do we need? What are the issues we need to discuss and make decisions on? So we have that table that's being visualized there. So this is all on the project wiki. You can find these discussions. There's pages that are linked from the discussion table. If there's further analysis needed to clarify the decision, so all that information is being tracked there, and can be looked at. And people are welcome to maybe add something they like to discuss or something they need. We can bring it up there, and we can take it up.
I think it would be good just to show, you know, some of the sorts of issues and stuff that have been discussed, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about compatibility with the old database, which was very tiny. We agreed not to do it. So instead, we're going to model what the data that was there. We talked about things like interface style. We talked about the integration of a temporal DB as well. Sorry, that's back at the top, Ben. This is Bell Canada's particularly interested in this part where we're storing the state of certain parts of the data, and there's like a temporal aspect. People can query, okay, what was the state of something? So, and how we integrate that with the current system as well. So these kind of things have been discussed. What else do we have there? Upgrade is still kind of open. We have flows. We've had a lot of discussions. Okay, how does CPS learn about the models? And I think we have about four different scenarios there, how they can come in. At the moment, the POC had only kind of the manual input, but again, it's about making the infrastructure ready so that the models can be taken in from wherever they need to come in. We found an existing Young parser in ODL, which we had some discussion about whether it should be used. So there was some PyYoung as well, so we had a few options, but in the end, we agreed that we used the ODL Young parser, as the Java was the preferred language for this service, and the Young parser tool is a Java library that is very extensive and covers all our needs. Not sure there's anything else. We talked a little bit about transactions. That was quite important. So transaction is not being supported over the REST interface, but the Java interface will have the concept of a session. So those are kind of the architecture, high level architecture decisions that have been discussed on Fridays. I think everything else is still open. Yeah, that DCA DES, that's about sharing of queries that I mentioned earlier there. And Neve is going to present the long-term Java API, so she's working on that.
And so you can see some of the things that the team is working on, basically, right? So, good. Okay.
So this is the architecture, pretty standard layered architecture. The main thing that's unusual about it is that we have an SPI, a service provider interface, for the database. So the idea is that other providers could implement this SPI using a different database technology for performance reasons or specific needs for their requirements. So it's kind of decoupling the database implementation from the rest of the service. But as part of the CPS project, we're delivering what we call a reference implementation of this SPI. So that's very much part of the project. So this was a bit about the status. I think I mentioned most of these things. Now we've now moved to the Nexus branch. So there's no that Nordics branch on CCSK, that's gone. The project setup has been completed, as I just mentioned. ODL Young Tools has been integrated. And we've tested it quite extensively now for parsing of JSON XML data, and that works fine. And we have some end-to-end iterations for, like, we can do stuff like parsing data, uploading the data. We've now gone as far as, but yeah, I should mention my concept meetings presentation probably first, because we're now doing things like creating anchors, but I have to go to the concept presentation first before that means anything for most people. So the REST API has been, and this is quite interesting, I think we're the first project that has properly used OpenAPI 3.0 to do a contract first definition of the REST interface. So we have links on the, I think, the developer's landing page, so somewhere there we have links to this stuff, so you can see the REST interface described in the YAML document, and then you can put a tool on that to visualize it, something like this. And it actually generates the Java code for us, so we only need to implement the interface and all the REST handling and all the documentation around that is all done automatically, and it's all basically driven by the YAML document that describes the REST interface. So this is an early view. The schema has, probably should have put into the title finalized there. It was a proposal that was finalized, I suppose, of the generic schema. So that is implemented. It's implemented in Postgres at the moment, but the whole idea is it's actually database. It can be implemented in any kind of relational database, but even in a non-relational database, the way the limited kind of ID of objects is also suited for a graph database. And that was the main idea, that it can easily be migrated. So we did some performance testing because there was some concerns, and it was part of the proof points, making sure that this concept of a generic, some people had some doubts about that you can store generic data in a generic fashion and still have a good performance, but we've proven that we can. And this is just running on a simple laptop, just kind of give a base ID. So we were able to insert 450 records per second. While that insert was going on, we executed XPath queries, and they were returning in less than a tenth of a second. And we were able to count for a certain condition of a tree with 75,000 objects in less than a second. The leading of that same tree took a bit longer, and this has to do with the database constraints and indexes that were applied to our data that made the deletion a little bit more cumbersome, but it's less frequent use case anyway, and it's still completed in about 6 seconds. Yeah, this is about the demos that we normally present after this, but we're not set up for that now. So this is an overview, again, of the POC results. So the seed code, we have that basic now, we have the seed code, and it's gone into a project now. We've proven the four proof points that we set out for the POC. We've got the architecture agreements on the key things that the project needed. So it gives way forward, and that's been agreed now. But for the pocket was agreed, we're going back soon to the architecture committee again for the project approval of the architecture. The core functionality has been proven to work with those end-to-end use cases that I mentioned earlier, and the integration of the young parser. And we have some idea of the performance, as you saw in the previous slide.
Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about the roadmap here. so Just to get some terminology straight, there were projects that were immediately needed the solution of a data layer service handling and managing network element data. And actually, it started with even before R6 in the OFSON PCI use case. And they used a ConfigDB, what's called a ConfigDB solution internal to CCSDK. And that was starting to get confused with the actual CPS. So we called that CPS 1.0. And that ConfigDB solution is a solution which does store and allow you to rudimentarily store and access data. And there is network element data being used by the OFSON PCI use case that you'll see. So then in R7 now, we had worked for quite a bit of time in 2019 and into 2020 for the actual project page and the project proposal and the project flows and the project architectural component diagrams. And in R7, we needed to extend this solution for CPS 1.0 because there were now NN network slicing and continuations of machine learning enhancements in OFPCI as well. So there were needs for this solution to continue and be extended and to support new uses. So concurrently with that, the POC that Toyn just described was setting up and establishing a foundational set of software to serve as the basis for CPS 2.0. And additionally, Bell Canada was working for developing a state management POC because they're interested in managing the, taking a look and tracking states of elements in the system. And then now in R8, CPS has been accepted to be a standalone component. Eventually we'll deprecate CPS 1.0 and 1.1. We've completed the project proposals and TSC approval. We're giving an architecture subcommittee presentation on December 1st. So if you're interested in finding out more, those slides have more architectural details. And then we've, as Toyn mentioned, we've set up the basic things we need for the project to be a standalone project. And then we'll slowly be developing functionality and more and more advanced functionality. So we have very basic functionality to start with, read and write and access, and then eventually things like data recovery, model adaptation and auditing and traversal and syncing, maybe perhaps in Istanbul and Kyoto and beyond. Data auditing, data history rollback, backup and performance optimization. And the reason why we have this roadmap, one of the things was, let me just show you real quick, was that when we were doing the project proposal, if you look at other project pages, it really describes the full functionality of that thing, of that component over, you know, its life. So, and many things of course have been evolved over many, many years. And so the project proposal completely describes all of the functionality that we could have, I think. And that was sort of confusing some people, I think. So we wanted to add and make clear that, you know, we're not developing everything all at once because that would be obviously impossible. But rather there's an evolution of some basic functionality to more advanced and then more and more advanced functionality. So now we don't have Bell Canada on the call, but there's a POC that deals with that Bruno Sakoto and others from Bell Canada have been driving. Which is basically looking at state element, state information and storing and tracking and using state information in a network. And of course you can imagine that would be, there's actually two POCs and use cases in R7 and R8 that deal with intent network, you know, network intent management that basically you give it a sort of template of what you'd like the system to do, and the system trying to translate that with models and other things to create services and policies and things to act on that intention. So you might, as a simple example, you might say an example they use actually in their use case like if you want to adjust the output of a network flow or throughput or a factory's output, that's your intent, and then that they translate that into settings. And of course, you can see it's crucial to understand your network states in order to do that. And by the way, it's a very interesting use case. Actually, I've attended some of the architecture calls. There is a talk on that happening next year. So in January 7th and January 14th, I think these will be very interesting talks to attend. I've been in contact with these teams to schedule talks on those in the start of the year. So, okay. It should be just noted that there, aside from the state management, the OFSON PCI use case, of course, this is an earlier slide of their sort of flow, but it captures the basic idea where you want to track the PCI, the physical cell identifier values of cells, and store those, and you'll be using, this will be CPS in order to track parameters like your cell ID and PCI values, neighbor list, and so forth, and then to be able to adjust your PCI value. So that's an application of the use case. And of course, and a network slicing, where as you adjust and set the slices. So that team is also making a lot of progress. These columns 1 and 4 are done now. The ability to set core and transport and RAN NSSMFs are in place. The only thing that was really kind of missing is these support for external CSMFs. Because these 3GPP APIs aren't quite there yet, they've made a lot of progress. The network slicing team, and of course, driven from 3GPP TS28.540 and 541, which is the 3GPP 5G NRM, you can see a lot of parameters that they need to manage, which of course would be stored in CPS. And of course, there are others such as the A1 policy extension as well. So I want to make sure I give time to Toyn here to talk on the CPS concepts here. So do you have any questions on the general, so Tony, I kind of walk through your bit here real quick.
No problem, Ben.
About setting the stage, but hopefully I did a reasonable job. Any questions on the basic concepts or things about the CPS or the POC that we're doing in R7, which will evolve into the full-blown project. Okay, so Toyn, I'm gonna turn it over to you to do the, do you have your slides up? I can find them too if you don't.
Sorry, Ben, if you get them ready. Would you mind if Niamh goes first? I actually have to step out for one minute. In a couple of minutes. So no, if Niamh goes first, it would be a bit easier.
Yeah,
thanks. Niamh. If you don't mind, Niamh.
Sure, I'll share my screen.
Oh, I probably need to allow you to share. Okay. Okay. We don't see your screen yet if you're trying to share or... Okay, there we go.
Hold on, it keeps going to the wrong screen. 1 second. Okay, I'll just drag it over. Can you guys see the...
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So this is the wiki page we created to document your API. I'll just give you guys an overview of that and also our SPI page. So it was important for us to have a good detailed view and structure of the naming of the interface going forward, and also to document any decisions that we made when designing it. So when designing this, we followed the ONAP best practices guidelines. All design decisions are documented here and also discussed and agreed with the CPS team. We also have discussed and shown this proposal to the wider community on inner Friday meetings. So if I go down here, we added this table to document any open issues or decisions that came across during the design. As I previously mentioned, all decisions were made by the team with the help of our architect, Tony. So that's there. We still have an open issue here, but we will discuss that in future meetings. Here we have a section for error handling. So this is just a high level overview of our exception class hierarchy. So we intend to have a CPS validation exception class at the top level, and the model validation exception, data validation exception, and path validation exception will extend from that.
These classes will basically describe the when there is an error like that gets encountered, right? Basically, these are thrown. Is that yeah. Like if there's a path problem that the path validation exception is executed, right?
Yeah. So we wanted to detail this because it will be in our Java doc with what is thrown for each method. So we also did a study of exceptions that we might use, and we mainly focused on ODL Young parser exceptions. Here's the proposed grouping of our interface methods. I'll show you guys the Java doc and that will explain this a bit more. So I'll open that here. So we propose to have three different interfaces: data service, module service, and query service. So if I click in here, this is our data service. It's responsible for handling CPS data. So we have different methods to associate, create, delete, and read in here. If I go back, we have our module service. So this is responsible for handling Yang modules. We have similar methods again to add, create, delete, and read. And we also have a query service. So this will allow you to query CPS data using a CPS path. Okay, so I'll show you guys the SPI now. So similar to the previous page, we have a decision and open issue table that has been agreed by the team. Still have one open issue that we will discuss in future meetings. We have a link to this E&M SPI study. There is a project in E&M that has an SPI that has allows for a pluggable DB. So we just had to look at that to take some inspiration from. So here is the proposal for our CPS API.
Wait, can you say a little bit more about the E&M SPI? So essentially, it's a interface which will allow for an external. It's a service provider interface that will allow for an external database to be connected to ONAP, and it provides like an API for that to happen. Is that right?
Yeah, it has an SPI for that.
So for example, there, just so other people know, we've the team has been in discussions with, for example, AT&T about temporal databases, and Theodore Johnson or Ted Johnson has enlightened us on some of those intricacies. And so I think this might be one of those ways that we could interface to another or a database. And also I think from Verizon Wireless, Fred Feuslin has described a lot about trying to handle and integrate existing databases, brownfield installations and stuff too, and this might be a step towards that.
Yeah, the SPI was very much an architecture decision to allow for different technologies to be substituted if needed.
Yeah, all right, great.
Okay, so yeah, this is the proposed implementation for our CPS API. So here we plan to have a data store SPI. So this will have a data store service, which will be responsible for accessing data node attributes. In our CPS admin, we have a data space persistence service and anchor persistence service for getting data space information and anchor features.
Yeah, sorry, it was a bit awkward. Now we had to do it the other way around. In the concepts, I'll explain what these things are for. So the admin part of the SPI is really about the internals of CPS, whereas the other one are the generic things for Yang. So that's the separation there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this would be for a Yang module SPI, so just for handling information about the Yang model module. Yeah, so I'll post a link to these two pages in the chat if anyone wants to have a deeper look. Thank you.
So just a quick question, Niamh. These all that detail is in that CPS or that I guess in that JIRA ticket. Maybe those also need to be integrated into the project page, or maybe that's something that we can talk about as on the team call. But that's a lot of really.
There was
great...
a Confluence page.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, we should probably integrate some of that information into the project page, our base project page, which I don't think is there yet, right?
No, this is all linked from the, if you go to the developer's landing page, then okay. there's an analysis page there. So we have all the user stories that require a lot of analysis, especially okay. the spikes. So the outcome of those are linked there. So it's, okay. yeah, it's linked to the developer's landing page,
okay,
which
great.
Is linked.
I just didn't want it to be buried in some Jira ticket.
I know, yeah. No, it's not. No, absolutely not buried in a Jira ticket. This is okay. all on the owner wiki.
And the guys have been updating the issues and decisions table as well. The issues, assumptions, and decisions.
So yeah, we went over that before. Too. Yeah, you joined the call. Yep. Great. Thanks, Niamh. Toyin, are you ready to present your...
Yeah, I'm ready to present now. Would you mind presenting, because I don't have the bandwidth really.
Sure.
You will stop hearing me, which makes it a bit boring.
Okay, so I think it was
the concepts.
Yeah, this one I believe. Yep, on October 22nd. Yep.
Yeah. So this presentation, if you maybe got to present the presentation.
I don't know why it's hold on. Zoom is okay. Go into presentation mode. I don't know why it thinks there's an app that's pinging me or something. So okay.
Okay, thanks. So yeah, part of, as we worked on CPS, we realized apart from the Yang concepts, which I'm also explaining in this presentation, we have also had to come up with some of our own concepts specific to CPS. So this presentation is explaining both the Yang and the CPS specific concepts. So first of all, models. People talk about models all the time. It's the models that describe the data, and that's the purpose of CPS, that we use the models to store any type of data. So some people see it as a schema. But model itself is actually not a keyword in Yang. It doesn't use the term model. It instead uses the word module. And typically what we think of as a model is probably a combination of one or more modules. So, and they often gathered in one files, but they can also be multiple files. But one model file can, as I said there, will contain one or more modules. And of course, each module is typically Yang, they often call them fragments as well, Yang fragments. They can link to other modules. So a module can import other modules, it can augment using another module, etc. And then finally, each module has a unique name that's referred to as namespace, and a revision. A revision effectively is the version of the model. And the idea is that any time you need to change a model, you actually update the revision. So you never really change an existing module. You just release a new version of it, or a new revision of it. So Yang defines two types of data structures at a high level, which is containers, which you can only have one of, and list, as the name is suggested, a list of collection of many of the same things. each of these containers can contain other containers. So a container can contain a list, and a list can contain containers, et cetera, et cetera. And that's usually built up your tree that I'll show you later. Now, the actual instance of a container is what we call a node in our actual application, because node is a very loaded term. We call it a data node, just to be specific and not mix it up with a network node. But the proper term in Yang for one instance of a container is a node. And then the attributes that these containers have, they're called leaves. So that's just Yang specific terminology. Yeah. So on the next page I show on the left, we've developed for testing purposes, both unit test and actual demo purposes, I've been developing this stores model that describes a list of different types of store. And now at the moment we have only one store, a bookstore. And the bookstore, as you can see there, has a name, it has the revision I mentioned earlier. And then there is a bookstore container. The bookstore container contains a list of categories. So these are just real life, well, not real life, these are made up examples, but I think they help to illustrate it a bit better, the concept that we're using. So this is the model on the left, and then on the right, we have a data instance.
A quick question here. So you mentioned above here, there's two different kinds of things. There's lists and containers. And correct. So a container is like a bookstore, and a bookstore contains a bunch of books, I guess. And one type of list are the different, like science fiction, fantasy, horror, et cetera.
Yeah, it's built up a little bit more. You see the books there just at the bottom. So the categories is a list in this case. And then there's another list of books underneath that as well.
Okay, so you can have lists within containers,
et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's typically how a model is built up. It's usually a deep nesting of these two. And as far as I understand, these are the main two types of containers that Yang supports.
Okay.
And then on the right, we actually have a data instance. So that's a JSON in this case. It can also be XML. And the parser that I mentioned earlier is able to parse both JSON and XML. So what the parser actually does, to explain it, is you would give it the model on the left of the module, and then you say, I have this module and now I want you to validate or parse this data, and the parser will convert the data into data in Java objects representing that data, and it will do some level of validation. One of the purposes of CPS is to enhance that validation, to add much more validation, because the parser only does some basic validation at the moment.
So essentially you feed it data and it fits it into this model and
it tries to fit in that model, and if it doesn't fit, it throws out one of those exceptions that Niamh mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And if it does fit, you get in Java you get an object tree, and that's what I'm trying to visualize here, and that's the way I usually picture it in my head. So the trunk itself would be the first container, it would be the bookstore container, and then you see two instances in this case of the categories list. So one going left, one going right, and each of them having some books underneath it. You also see some leaves, so those are the attributes, but I'll explain it in more detail on the next slide. Actually, there's a question coming up here, I think, if you click, maybe it's not in this version, yeah. So a little test if people want to guess how much, but you need to see the whole data tree. So how many nodes, to go back to the proper Yang term, how many nodes does this tree have? And I'll explain it on the next slide. So the tree in the previous slide had six nodes, but the trunk itself, and sometimes I want to avoid that word, use the word root. Often people call it root, but I try to avoid that word because it's an XML term, which is slightly different in Yang, and I don't want to mix that up. But the trunk is the first container, it's your top level container, and then the branches are all further containers, and we have six in the total. Now I mentioned the leaves, so I have a bit more detail here, so you can see some examples of leaves there, the price, the value, and some containers, especially the list, they typically have key attributes to identify them, because you can have multiple categories you need to be able to identify it, and therefore we have a key attribute kind of painted in orange here, so to be able to find unique entries. Okay, if you want to go to the next slide. This is a specific concept we came up in CPS. So this is the anchor, and Neve mentioned that a couple of times. You saw that in the API. So the anchor is where we're going to plant the tree. That's the way I like thinking of it, because we need a way of externally referencing to it. Otherwise, they'll just be sitting there, and you can't. You could literally have two instances, and you can't differentiate them. This is also where the overlap with AI would come in, possibly that if we're talking about configuration data. So the anchor, and it's later been proposed that we will have multiple attributes here, multiple IDs it can support for any kind of interaction with any existing application to store references. But for the CPS itself, the main reference is the anchor name. And the most important bit of information that it stores is a reference to the module. Currently, we have been had some feedback on this, and it's now become clear to me that one anchor might have to be able to support multiple trees and therefore multiple references to young namespaces and revisions. So we're going to have a set of models, maybe just a reference to one unique set, or maybe a specific list of model entries that hasn't been quite finalized yet. But that's the concept of the anchor, so that's kind of important to understand because it's specific to CPS. Another thing specific to CPS is the concept of data spaces. So this is related to the idea that an amount of data belongs to one application or is really owned by one application. And since CPS can host data for many applications, many types of data, we need to ring fence, and that's literally the analogy that I've used here, a group of trees and a certain limited types of trees. So that's what the data space is. It's a limited fence, a limited list of trees that application supports, maintains, and it's responsible for keeping that up to date with the models, etc. Finally,
how do you specify like these groups of trees how do you specify?
So if you look at the API again, you'll see methods for that, the REST API. So when you add a module, you always add it to your own data space. Now, it is important that the data space is something that's agreed at design time, because it's important that different applications do not use the same data space. So that's a unique identifier, and it's important for every interaction with CPS that you say, what data space are you using? It's a bit like when you're dealing with a database, the first thing you typically do is specify your database, because your database service typically supports many databases, and you connect to one of them, or you specify one of them. And finally, then there's an owner there as well. So this is, we've talked about this in the meetings about control and access. It still needs to be worked out a bit. We haven't really gone beyond architect or IDs for this, but there is the concept of an owner for a data space, and that will be related to maintaining who can have access, who can read the data, who can write the data, that kind of stuff. So to be some kind of registry, we're working that out still. So this is the flow. So how would we put this all together? How would it work? Now, first, as I said, we might have a new service in ONAP. Let's call this a shop manager. So the shop manager then agrees with the other application that its namespace is called, or its data space, sorry, I always mix up those two terms. The data space is called stores. And then as the service is up and running or at the start time, it will, can start adding young modules. And this is actually a runtime activity. So it can add the bookstore young model that I showed earlier to its data space. And then as it needs, it can create instances for each store by creating an anchor and then associate a data tree. So upload a data tree either in JSON or XML and then associate it or add it to that anchor, planting the tree as I described it earlier. But at any time, if a new type of store comes up, for instance, it wants to start supporting hardware stores, it can add that module still at runtime without going back to any code changes, and it can start creating anchors and instances. So that's the whole model-driven aspect of this of the CPS application. I'm not sure in recent versions. Yes, I do have a slide here on XPaths. I have changed it a bit since, but yeah, XPaaS, for people that are familiar with FDNs, fully distinguished names, XPaaS is a bit like that. It's your direction. How do you go up the tree? How do you find a specific container? So you follow those arrows, and then there in blue, I have the example there, the bookstore, that's unique, so it doesn't have a key. Then the categories, it says, okay, you have to follow the name equals sci-fi, so that's the key attribute, and that might turn you to the left there. And then it points to a specific book, again, by the title, which is defined as the key attribute for in that particular list. So that's what we called qualified names. They uniquely identify one unique entry in the tree. That's not really a query. It's going to be our first method in CPS if you want to get a piece of data, that's how you could get it. But then XPaaS is, you can look up the link there. It's a huge language. It's really impressive the kind of things it can do. But the idea is, the more basic ideas are like, okay, give me the child or something, or it might use wildcards to get different nodes. But you can build queries in many forms with just a single string expression. As I said, XPaaS is very extensive, but the idea is, and the intention is, that CPS will just look at the core functionality of XPaaS and provide that on a as needed basis for the use cases that we're looking at. So, but eventually it will evolve to cover more of the functionality of XPaaS. I think what these are not really these are a bit too detailed for now. Ben, I won't go into the actual different types of queries. There will be eventually different types of queries, but we're still working on that. But for the main concepts, I think we have.
Also, just as we reach the end of time here, maybe you want to say some words also about our, for people who want to navigate to, you can go to onap.wiki.onap.org, go to approved projects, and you'll see CPS as a approved project. And maybe you want to say some words about the landing page and stuff.
I think it's, yeah, if you open it there. So there's a landing page. I actually, the meetings, I'm going to update that because that has only changed this week again. We have no regular meetings because our team has grown a bit. We have people in Canada and Eastern Europe, and we picked a new daily time to try to sort everybody. I think you need to open the children pages of that. See if you click on the implementation proposals there on the left, because it's not directly linked in the navigation. Yeah, go to the last one. There you can see all the different proposals. And then you see the API and the SPI appearing here. I don't know, are they at the top, Neve? So the SPI is there in the middle, and then the rest API responses. I'm not sure if that's the right one. Long-term Java API.
Yeah,
is that
the it's one there in the middle.
Yeah. I need to sort, literally sort the order of that. I think you can control that. The newest one should really be on the top. I'll change that so that it is always the newest ones on top. But that's where all what we talked about earlier, all the analysis go for separate user stories.
Yep, great.
So,
okay, any questions from anybody on anything? We are actually over time, so I just wanted to make sure that if there are any questions from anybody on anything. Okay, if not, maybe we'll end the call here. And thank you everybody for attending. I hope you found this useful. I'll upload the recording and slides so that you can get them and review them at your leisure. Okay, thank you everybody. Thanks, Tony and Neve and Tony for joining.
Thanks, Ben. All
right. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.